Players Anatomy. I'm your host, Charlie DeClean. I am a physical therapist at Bell & Health Titletown Sports Medicine Orthopedics, a stone's throw away from iconic Lambeau Field in Green Bay, Wisconsin. On today's episode, we have an interview with Roland Schmidt on the topic of mental health for the athlete. Roland is an athletic trainer with 20 plus years of experience at the collegiate, high school, and even professional level. Roland is also a certified youth mental health first aid instructor, and he has a really interesting story to tell. So stretch out, warm up, and get ready. This is Players Anatomy. News of the day. First up, the injuries are starting to pile up in the NFL, and this is sadly really common in the early stages, especially the preseason. You know, again, this is where, you know, we really thought COVID was really only going to affect last year, but we're definitely starting to see it seep into this year as well of, you know, COVID again definitely limited how these athletes could train in the offseason, and so many of these soft tissue injuries are that. You know, don't get me wrong, we're seeing some of the, sadly, I know AJ McCarron, he's a backup for the Atlanta Falcons, he tore his ACL, you know, but a lot of these groin and hamstring injuries that we're starting to see pile up, so many of them are just, a lot of times, just not able to train the way you normally would have trained, and now all of a sudden you're getting these reps at full speed, and all of a sudden we have problems. So, you know, again, the main reason we always try to talk about, you know, we pick an injury. My main thing today is going to tell you is when you see an injury and you see what it is, go to a good source for information. Obviously, that's what this podcast is all about, but go to a good source on the internet to give you an example of what that is. Obviously, we have our prior, all of our prior podcasts here that we've covered a lot of topics, but if there's anything you know of that you want to hear about, obviously, please let me know. A follow-up to it, you know, only a couple weeks ago, we were talking about the Carson Wentz injury, the foot injury, and all of a sudden we're hearing that he is already going to be starting some on-field activities and weight-bearing. So, you know, obviously his foot surgery went very well, and he's already on to his next stages of rehab, which is exciting for him. So, but again, no major crazy injuries out there as much as just a lot of little ones starting to pile up. As I mentioned before, today's interview is Roland Schmidt. So he is a licensed athletic trainer here at Bell & Health Titletown. Roland has been covering, he was a with the U.S. speed skating team straight out of school. Then he covered athletics at the college level, and now he's been at the high school level for, he said, a little over 23 years. So he has a lot of knowledge to share with us. And today's topic is really mental health in the athlete. And really where this came from was, right after the last podcast dropped with Dr. McKenzie on ACL reconstruction, Roland is a very kind to me as a coworker listening to the podcast, and he immediately texted me after I went on my rant about mental health with Simone Biles, and he goes, I want to come on and talk more about that. You know, this, you're spot on. We got to talk more about it though. There's even more to it, and I want to talk about it. This is one of my passions. So that is why we had him on today, and the interview is fantastic. I hope you really enjoy it. You know, if you're listening as an athlete, you're listening as a parent, there's something for each of you in this, really well done. I thought he did a great job of really talking very plainly about the topic so everybody can understand. So, I hope you enjoy this interview. Here is Roland Schmidt. Roland, thanks for joining us. So, let's start with the topic of what is mental health in general?
So, kind of the definition that we go by within our mental health realm is any factors that limit your ability to function in daily life. Are you struggling in school because of some of your mental health, depression, anxiety, whatever it may be? Are you struggling to complete your work tasks? Friendships, are friendships being diminished because of some of your mental health issues that you may be experiencing? That's kind of the realm of what we look at and definition of how we determine, is this a mental health illness that this person is really working with and dealing with?
Would you agree everything's on a spectrum? So when we say, you know, anxiety, depression, we're not saying it's always going to be like, well, then you just get medication, right? Well, did you take medication? You know, the idea of what kids are dealing with, but everything's on the spectrum. We talk about dealing with friends. Anxiety can simply just be negative thought processes and just not thinking you're good enough. It doesn't always mean I'm nervous all the time. Would you agree?
Absolutely, yeah. And that's a really good point, Charlie, is that when you think about mental health and mental health diagnoses and everything else, you really look at, as you said, there's a spectrum, and not everybody's going to be clinically depressed or suicidal on a suicidal watch, that they're, you know, needing to be hospitalized or, you know, that type of situation. It can be as little as, you said, you know, just having the inability to function or inability to want to be around your friends because of your anxiety level or because of a depression level or because of fear of one thing or another. So, yeah, there's this huge gamut and huge range and spectrum of what we determine as mental illness that we can certainly, you know, hope to affect with our students.
And you and I were talking about this off air before we started here, but there's this stigma, and I think it's very generational. So when somebody says, you know, mental illness, you know, I always feel like our older generations are like, so you're crazy. So you should be on suicide watch. And that's the part that I feel like is the most misunderstood. You know, I mentioned in our intro that, you know, recording today came totally out of my rant off of last episode about Simone Biles. And this idea of, yeah, she's struggling with her mental health. And it became physical. But I also think, you know, to kind of bring it to our first topic of the day, of like kind of current day stressors. You know, I joke with my wife, my daughter all the time. I am so glad I went to school when there was no social media. I am so glad I went to school when the internet wasn't hardly a thing yet. Because, man, you guys have so many more stressors to deal with now than before. What are some of the major current day stressors you see and how that plays into mental health?
It's funny you bring those up. I did a presentation with Charles Latour and some others just recently for Bellin here. And that's actually one of the exact topics that we discussed, is that, you know, the young man who misses the free throw, it used to be our team as basketball players was upset, and maybe a few of the kids that were in the school, you know, in the stands that night were upset that we lost the game because I missed the free throw. But you look at it now, and the scout that's in the stands, he tweeted that Roland Schmidt missed his free throw, and he tweets that, you know, his scholarship potential may have dropped because he's big game stressors, you know, he can't handle. Those are things that are real. You know, we've got kids that are now, you know, tweeting and Snapchatting, you know, and the keyboard warriors that are out there is an absolute stressor for these kids and for these athletes at this point. You led off, Charlie, with this generational gap of thinking. And I really think that's something that we need to address as well with our parents, with even, you know, I'm 50 years old, and even my generation as well. You see that this paradigm shift for the better is coming along, and that kids are now able to, and adults are able to speak of mental illness. And we need to continue to push that shift. We need to continue to squash that stigma of mental health. As you said, oh, mental health, you must be crazy. Well, those are things that we need to get rid of. We need to really, you know, try to squash that thought process and that thinking, and those responses to somebody who's coming to you for issues or problems or trials and tribulations in their life. And I think it's really important that we work to do that.
It's old stereotypes, right? And I mean, there's things racially that we're working on with old stereotypes, right? This to me is in the same bucket of just old world thinking that we have to change, because it just feeds the problem if we allow it to keep going, right? How about as far as, you know, I know you and I were talking offline, and one of the phrases you said I really liked is this idea of allowed to speak up. What did you mean by that?
I think allowed to speak up goes along with that paradigm shift, if you will. When somebody was, you know, struggling, whatever, they had to internalize all of that. They felt that I have to deal with this on my own. I have to be the one to champion my own health, my own mental health. Kids are now allowed, and anybody, adults are allowed to speak up and say, I need help. I'm not able to deal with this stress, anxiety, fear, depression on my own. I need help. And I think it's really it's been this great shift that we've seen that, you know, our folks that are really struggling with these mental illness issues are able to speak up and say, I really need some help. Can you help me? Can you direct me to somebody who can help me? And I think that's really important that we continue to foster that thought process of telling people that you're not alone. You do have support. You do have the ability to speak up without repercussions, without the old school of thinking is you're crazy. Right. We're going to hospitalize you. No, that's not what we're talking about. That's what we want to dispel. We want to be allowed to tell people, speak up, talk to somebody about this.
Yeah, and I know you've done a presentation for us in the past about, obviously, sadly, trying to look for, you know, look for things that our youth are saying, so that in the extreme cases that, yeah, sadly, you know, teen suicide rates are, it's real, which is awful. It's absolutely awful, and we have to catch those cases, right? At the same time, I still think there's a huge issue as well. Obviously, death is by far the worst, but this idea of just building young, strong, young adults as they get older, of instilling in them, it is okay to ask for help. And by doing this, you're gonna be stronger because of it, instead of, I just, like you said, internalize it, I've gotta just figure this out myself. And if you don't, you know, even what you can do with your life, you know, personally or professionally, is gonna be limited by that.
You know, you talk about us as medical professionals, physical therapists, I'm an athletic trainer. We tell people all the time, when your knee is sore, don't wait until it's so sore that you can't walk anymore before you seek help. I was lucky enough, and because this topic has interested me for so long, I took a youth mental health first aid course. After that course, I then became an instructor because I thought it was such an interesting and fantastic concept that we all needed to have this concept and this ability to offer first aid, mental health first aid to individuals. So as I took those courses, it was eye-opening to just see how often and how quickly we can affect somebody's life. I used an example of a real life experience that I had, that a young person came into my athletic training office, and I could tell they were just off, right? I know these kids fairly well. I knew she was off. They had had a few bad games prior to that point, and two or three or four days later, as I said, that person came into my room, and I just said, boy, you look really fatigued. Is there something I can do to help you out? And the response was, no, I'm okay. Just got a lot going on. Okay, so fast forward a week and a half, I continue to monitor this person from afar, right, without being a pest. And this person comes back to my room and says, thank you very much. Thank you very much for noticing. And then thank you for allowing me to do that, because I went and got help and I feel a lot better now. All I did was say, you look a little off. Do you want to talk to me? Right. And that's all I did. So this youth mental health first aid course that I took and now instruct really guides the lay rescuer, if you will. You know, we use that term in CPR and in first aid, the lay rescuer, the non-medical professional, allows that first aid, youth mental health first aid rescuer to be able to just recognize little things. So their knee pain doesn't get so bad that they can't walk.
Right.
Their mental health doesn't get to the point where it's so bad they're talking about suicide.
Right.
So I think it's really important for us to be cognizant and recognize when people are not themselves. You know, as family members, as parents, as clinicians, as coaches, we know these student athletes, we know these kids, we know our colleagues, we know our coworkers. Notice the little things that are going on with these people. I think that's really important to do.
Yeah, and I really like the way you said that. And I think it kind of ties into the next piece that we were going to talk about, was really this idea of, you know, we talked about current day stressors, not only from social media, but then this idea of what youth sports has become, the parental involvement in that. And I've touched on it multiple times during this podcast about that. But, you know, this idea of parents want to do everything they can for the kid to be successful. But at times, all we're thinking about is the physical success of our kids, right? Of, well, if I give them enough opportunities, physically, skill-wise, they'll get better. They have opportunities. And it's like the mental just doesn't exist, you know, and one of the topics we'll come back to here in a few minutes is, you know, the mental is physical and how they are completely, you cannot separate one from the other. But this idea of simply just checking in like, hey, how you doing? You good? You know, and I think that's been the saddest thing for me on my side. I know I've mentioned on the podcast before, but watching kids who are talented at a young age then not compete when they get to the high school level in something. And when you randomly ask them, like, hey, can I ask, why aren't you, you were so good at soccer, why aren't you playing soccer? I don't love it anymore. It's like, wow. You know, the story I always tell is a kid I played against in high school tennis, by far the best tennis player in this area, placed at state our senior year, ran into him, you know, a couple years later after college. Hey, just assumed he was playing in college, right? Because he was so talented. Hey, so where did you end up playing? You know, do you ever want to hit this summer? And he goes, what are you talking about? I said, tennis, my man. Like, where are you playing? I'm clearly, you got a full ride somewhere. He goes, I haven't picked up a racket since state, my senior year. I said, what? He goes, I didn't love it. My parents are the ones that wanted me to keep playing. I didn't want to play. I did it for them. I felt bad. They'd put so much money into me getting lessons. I felt bad. It was absolutely eye-opening to me. So let's start there. Let's start with this idea of, I always say, I really do believe every parent's heart is in the right place. They want to give their kids every opportunity. And this isn't easy, right? If it was easy, right, it would be exactly a problem, right? What are your thoughts on that topic of parental involvement with this stuff?
You're absolutely right. You know, a parent of, you know, three athletes myself, I always wanted to give them the opportunity to get better. Send them to a camp. Send them to a, you know, strength and conditioning program here at Bellin. Do a throwing evaluation for my two boys that are pitchers. I always want them the opportunity to get better. But in my role as an athletic trainer as well, what I hear and see, as you alluded to, is there's that line. And that line is very lightly drawn in a sand on the beach where the waves keep crashing down. That line continually moves. And every student and every person that move, that line is a little bit further into the ocean or a little further away onto the beach. So parents have to find that moving line sometimes. And I think that that line of opportunity versus pressure becomes really fuzzy. And parents sometimes cross that line, unfortunately. I pushed my son, my daughter too hard in their given sport, in my chosen sport for my son or daughter sometimes, as you talked about with your friend with tennis. And that's really hard to watch because, as you said, I see it, I bet two or three times a year in my athletic training room, somebody walks in and says, oh yeah, I'm not playing, or I'm not doing this, or I'm not doing that my junior year, my senior year. And I look at them, I go, really? Why are you not? Yeah, too many camps, didn't like it, just burned out.
Just don't love it anymore.
Just totally burned out. And it crushes my heart to hear that from a young person who looked previously like they really enjoyed what they were doing. But then moving forward, because a parent's idea of I want them to have a scholarship, or a parent's idea of I want them to be the state champion, I want to give them every opportunity to reach their goals. But have we as parents really asked them, what are your goals? What do you want to do in this sport? Are we pushing you too hard? Do you want to take a weekend off from this weekend of wrestling tournaments or volleyball tournaments or whatever tournaments? And should we go as a family to the park? You know, I think it's really important for parents to maybe take that step back and ask their kids, is this really still your goal? Are you still having fun? And for them to be okay to say, no, I need a break. And for parents to support that decision and support that kind of a conversation, I think will really help with students continuing in their given sport or their chosen sport. And their chosen sport not their parents chosen sport. Yeah. So,
and I think the hard part too is, you know, I've got two kids myself that are middle school and high school aged, and my approach has always been, you know, I love my kids to death, but there's nothing, neither of my kids were these freak athletes from straight out of the womb here, right? Where you're like, oh my gosh, my son's 6'8". I mean, we've got opportunities, right? It's not. So it was right off the bat, it was, okay, and even if it was that, you know, my approach is always, if we're not having fun, what are we doing? Because why are we doing sports? You know, correct. For me, it's life lessons. Learning how to train for something, learning how to deal with failure, those types of things, right? Learning how to work with other people, work towards a goal.
Absolutely.
It wasn't, well, this is our only opportunity of you being successful in college, is you better get your college paid for. It's not what it is, right? And so my thought has literally been, and you know, you did a presentation for us, which just reiterate this for me, is just regularly checking in. Hey, how was practice today? Was it fun? Are you still having fun? And for both my kids, growing up, basketball was mine and my wife's favorite. Okay. And both my kids at a rather young age fell out of love with basketball. And my gut reaction was, but I love it, so you should do it, right? And
absolutely.
Then it's like, okay, hold on. Right as I'm about to say it out loud, like, don't say that out loud. You know, and a lot of it was checking in with them, like, hey, how's basketball going? No. It was kind of like, okay, then what are we doing? It's okay, you're not gonna disappoint me. I know I loved it, and I've coached you. That's okay, though.
Right.
That's all right. What do you love? What do you wanna do? That's okay. But also thinking ahead of, does it matter in 25 years from now that they didn't compete in high school because they don't love it? No. And neither kid was pushed too hard with basketball. It wasn't that. It was just they didn't love it. That's okay. Right?
Right. And that's, you have to, again, as a parent, even as a coach, right? You have to recognize that as a coach. And I think it's okay to have those conversations as a parent, as a coach, or the coach slash parent, as you alluded to as well. I think it's really important that you have those conversations with kids, especially kids, right? I watched the Little League World Series, and I'm thinking in my head this exact conversation as I watched it. I'm like, I wonder how many of those kids are going to continue to compete in the high school or collegiate level because of how hard they're working for their dream of becoming a Little League World Series champ. And it that's just kind of how my twisted head works and where my mind goes. And that's how I think of things. And I kind of see that other side of sports as it is today. So it was concerning to think that way, but I think there's a realization that boy, oh boy, some of these kids may not play high school baseball, or some of these kids may not play collegiate baseball because they're just tired of traveling,
already
burned out, and you know, whatever.
Just so
might
sad.
Be. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's, I brought it up a couple of times. I really don't know what we do. Youth sports has gotten so wildly out of control. I think partially from the standpoint of, and I'm not saying all, but a lot of club stuff has become a business more than it was opportunities for our kids. It's become a business, which is, and it's not all, doesn't mean every club sport is bad. It doesn't mean that everything, but a lot of them do a great job of, still has to be fun. And the coaches do an amazing job of making it fun. But some of it has become, even from the standpoint of the demands we're putting on the kids, of how long, how many months a year, how many, as we call, athletic exposure hours, it's crazy, right? At the same time, if a kid loves it and they're still having fun and it's not interfering with social and in academics, it, like you said, the line is different for everybody. By no means are you the two of us sitting here thinking we have everything figured out and just do what we do and we're the perfect. By no means, right? But you know, the whole reason that you had contacted me, like, we got to record on this, was this idea of when I said mental is physical and you can't decide the two. So let's switch over to that. At every level, you know, I mentioned in the intro, you've been with the U.S. speed skating team. You've been an athletic trainer at the collegiate level. And now, you know, for the last several years, the high school level. At the end of the day, returning to sport is returning to sport, whatever level. Pressures might be a little bit ramped up at a professional level, but sometimes how much pressure people put themselves at the high school level is quite frankly the same, right? What is your take when I said mental is physical? What was your take on that and why you were so adamant that we needed to do this today?
I think that's the part that really triggered me is the mental is physical component, because we used to think of those as two separate entities. You have a mental illness or a physical illness, or a physical ailment or a mental ailment, and they're the same, right? the last time I checked, my head and my brain were attached to my body. I'm not great in anatomy, but the last time I checked, my head and my brain were attached to my body, thus should be a physical ailment, right? The mental is the physical. Simone Biles talked about her twisties. Well, I'm not a gymnast. I don't know exactly what that is, but that kind of sounded vestibular in nature or out of balance or inability to find balance. But that led directly to her fear and inability to feel confident about landing a very, very difficult, dangerous vault or floor routine or beam routine. And that very, very much limited her ability to compete. We see that all the time with athletics and specifically the return to play. You and Dr. McKenzie spoke about it in one of your podcasts just recently about an athlete really returns, an athlete really returns from an ACL 8 months, 9 months, 10 months down the road. We get them back to sport very quickly after that. But some of these athletes don't truly feel comfortable or confident for a year, 2 years. Because even though we have, in the clinical setting, gone through every possible movement pattern, every possible strength test, every possible demonstrated every movement that they're going to make on the field, on the court, wherever it may be, they're still not comfortable physically and mentally because of that fear of re-injury potentially. So I think the physical and the mental are one and the same. And we need to get out of, you know, thinking it's a mental ailment, it's a mental illness, or it's a physical, or it's a physical, or it's a, you know, it's one of the same. A mental illness is, or a mental problem is part of a physical issue. Right. We have to treat it as such, and we have to recognize it as such.
Yeah, and I think too many times when we think of somebody being mentally strong, we think of, you know, can you push through the pain? Right? Like a runner of just like, hey, it's gonna suck. You just gotta push through that. And it's a lot of times it's safe. Do you feel safe competing? You know, in the extreme cases, the concussions, where we obviously do not want to have another concussion before you're fully healed. But also, we don't want you to roll your ankle again. We don't want you to have, you know, re-injure your knee. It's real. You know, and I think that was the other thing I said about Simone Biles was this is real. So this is not being a kid being dramatic. Oh, they're dramatic. They like the attention. No, this is real. And we have to stop with these old stereotypes of what mental health or mental health illness is, because it's a problem. The stereotype is officially a problem, right?
For sure. And that's where we need to, you know, as an athletic trainer, I try to work directly with my coaches. And when a coach maybe brings up that statement, you know, oh, they're just soft. They're, you know, yeah. Could they play? Yeah, they could play. Yeah, absolutely. Yes, their ankle is definitely looking a lot better. But you know what? They're not ready to cut yet. Why aren't they ready to cut yet? Because they're not confident in that ankle yet. We haven't done some of those things that produce confidence for them. So I need to, as an athletic trainer, I need to take them out and produce confidence for them. I need to build that confidence mentally so that they can physically perform. Again, mental is the physical in that case. So it is, I try to dispel that rumor one, or that conversation one coach at a time, one conversation at a time, one athlete at a time, to really just allow them to, you know, hey, yes, they do have an ankle injury that they're recovering from, and they're 90% there. I need to give them the other 10%. And I know that 10% is not the swelling or the range of motion or the strength within their ankle. I know that other 10% is they're not confident. They're afraid they're going to re-injure. They're not sure that they can sprint at the same speed that they did before and cut at the same speed they did before, thus causing anxiety that they're going to fail, that they're going to disappoint the coach, that they're going to disappoint their parent. And I think that's important that all of those things relate to the physical part of how their ankle is looking, feeling, doing.
And again, that's real.
absolutely real,
right?
Like 100%
real.
Real.
Yeah. You know, and so I think to kind of sum up where we're headed here is the idea of, you know, you're obviously an embodiment of this, of there is help, right?
Absolutely.
So, do not struggle with this. If you find yourself like, oh, I don't know, I don't think I'm depressed. Oh, I don't think I struggle with anxiety. It doesn't matter. Help, no matter when, like you said, you know, using the knee example, if your knee hurts a little bit, it's okay to say, hey, my knee hurts a little bit, right? If you kind of feel like you're struggling in some shape or form and you don't want to diagnose it as a mental illness, but you just don't feel all in, it's, there's nothing wrong with that. There is help, right? So I guess my, where I would love to start first is, let's start with the actual athlete. Knowing there's no repercussions to you saying, I need some help. Or just simply having somebody that you want to, that you have safe for you to confide in you. So I know currently as we're recording this, you're at Wrightstown High School. My hope would be as every athlete at that high school feels confident coming to you saying, Roland, I'm not doing great. And where do you think I should start? They don't have to have all the answers. They don't have to know the plan, right? And you're not going to set them up with 12 appointments. You're going to say, well, here's what we could do, right? Let's talk to the athlete first that's listening right now. What would you like to tell them as far as what there's helped out there?
So the athlete themselves, as you said, you know, our athletic training staff here at Bellin, we've all gone through the youth mental health first aid course. We all are able to recognize those problems, those issues, to be observant, to be able to assess the athlete, to notice the athlete that's maybe struggling. So to our athletes that are out there, first and foremost, feel confident in the fact that you can speak to your athletic trainer.
With no repercussions.
With no repercussions. If you have a coach, you know, our coaches are with our students and our athletes quite often during the day. Many of them are not teachers. Many of them are not their parent. It's another adult that they can confide in and feel safe talking to without repercussions and be able to look to find some resolution to the issues that they may be struggling with. So don't be afraid to talk to your coach. Our coaches are wonderful people. They get into this business because they love kids. They want to see them succeed. They want to see them be healthy. They want to see them, you know, do the right things in life, teach them about life lessons. And this is part of that life lesson, is if you need help, reach out. There's always availability to talk to your school counselors. Please talk to your professionals that are available to you. They're wonderful people who have great training and obviously have a load of resources that they can refer you to. The other thing with the students that are out there or the adults that are out there, by all means, if you are at that point where your thoughts of suicide, thoughts of killing yourself, please, please, please reach out. Somebody's there for you. There's a text line, 741-741. All you need to do is text that, put in help. Somebody will talk to you. Somebody will talk to you immediately. Somebody who's trained at that level to speak to you. So please, by all means, reach out. 741-741, text in help. Somebody will be there to talk to you about that. And then again, don't be afraid to reach out to somebody around you, your parents. You know, if your parents are people that you can't talk to, you feel that there's repercussions potentially, again, come back to your athletic trainer, come back to the school counselor, come back to a teacher. A coach. We've got a ton of people around you that are willing to talk to you and listen to you and be able to support you. And as Charlie said, we may not have the answers at that moment, but we're gonna find the answers for you. We're gonna find you the help. We're gonna look for that text line. We're gonna look for the counselor that might be appropriate for this situation. So we'll help you find that answer.
Yeah, and they wanna help, right?
That's the biggest thing.
They don't like all that. I'm just gonna be bothering them. They want to help.
Yeah.
You know, it's why they're coaching. It's why they're teaching, right? This is why they're doing what they're doing.
Yeah. We got into this profession because we're helpers, right? Yep. Our job is to help people. Yep. That's why we got into this profession. So absolutely.
How about to our parents? So, you know, I tend to, my daughter loves putting stickers on her water bottle, and I've tried to absorb the one that she has that says positive vibes only, of, you know, just the idea of at times, you know, you watch your kid, you want your kid to do well, you want the best for your kids, and they have a tough game, and you want to give them feedback so bad, right? Oh God, you really struggled today, right? The idea of, like, at the end of the day, you know, making sure, in my mind, the and again, not trying to act like I have it all figured out, is just, for one, making sure, like, hey, you know I love you, right? Like, and that all that matters, you know? And just more starting, instead of like, you really struggled today, right? Of just come like, all right, so how'd you think you played today? Of just making it more of a conversation of that there's no consequences because you played bad.
Right.
Right? What are your thoughts to our parents?
I think the greatest title I was ever given probably was dad. So I'm a little choked up on that one. So, you know, I think as a parent, we need to think of what is our first title? Our first title is mom, dad. Okay. And we need to react to our children that way. And if we keep that as the premise of everything we do, starting there, I think is really easy to then think about, okay, how do I react to a bad game? How do I react to a great game? You said it. I love you. Great. Super. Start there. It was fun watching you today.
Right.
I enjoyed watching you and your teammates have fun on the field today. I didn't say anything about you dropped the pass, you missed the block, you missed the shot, you made the shot, you made the block, you caught the pass. I didn't say anything about that. I talked about, I had fun watching you and your kid, your friends have fun, you know, and start the conversation with that. I think that's the first part. You know, that car ride home is always the hardest part. The car ride home for those kids sometimes just dread that 15 minutes home. So we need to be cognizant and aware that, you know, we may say the wrong thing at the wrong time, especially in the heat of the moment. They know they dropped the pass. They know they missed the block. We don't need to reiterate. We don't need to, you know, twist the knife one more time. They feel bad enough. I think that's the first part. The second part of that is we talked about the pressures of giving them opportunity versus pushing them too hard. And I think, Charlie, you made a great point of just ask them, are you still having fun? Are we doing too much? And if they are, if their response is of a negative effect, then bring it back,
right.
Reel it back, figure out what needs to happen to make it fun again.
Right.
It's youth athletics. It should be fun. Yeah.
Check in regularly.
And do those check-ins so they know that you truly care. Not, well, you have fun. Well, good, because we're going to play anyways. That totally defeats what we just talked about. So I think it's really being able to check in regularly with your son or your daughter. And then just being supportive, you know, just being supportive for them. And then as a parent, parents know best. We know when our son or our daughter are off, when we know they're not themselves, when we know that we can recognize that they're retreating from their friends, when they're not socializing as much, when their homework is sliding, when they're having trouble concentrating and can't sleep. Those are all red flags. Those are all things that we should note and notice as parents to say, maybe I should, as a parent, look for some additional help for my son or my daughter. And maybe I should start making some phone calls to the professionals and saying, is this right? Here's what I'm noticing.
Right.
And it's not about tattletaling on my son or my daughter, or, you know, we're going to commit them to a psych ward. Or, I mean, we talk about that spectrum,
old stereotypes.
Right? Yep. All these old stereotypes that were out there. It's about us being vigilant as parents. Parents know best. I tell this all the time with my concussion parents, you know, kids with concussions. You know if your son or daughter is off. You know if they're having trouble concentrating. You know if they're dizzy. You know if they're not eating the normal amount that they normally eat at the dinner table with a concussion parent. I do the same thing with my parents who I think, you know, my kids might be having issues at home. So same thing.
Yeah. Well, really appreciate your time today, Roland. I know this was kind of impromptu based on a rant from my last one, but it's a topic that was on my list I wanted to cover anyways, and you were obviously the right person to do it, and I'm sure this is a topic, sadly, we will keep coming back to. You know, so I will put a link in today's thing with the help text line that you talked about so we can get that out there. Again, knowledge is power with this stuff, and you know, the sooner that we catch it in the process, the better. Like you said, don't let the knee be where you can't walk. Catch it when it's first turning, and just, it is okay to say, I think I need some help. I'm just not right. Find somebody you trust and find who that person is in your life. So, Roland, thank you again for all your time today. Appreciate it. Well, I hope you enjoyed that. that interview with Roland Schmidt. I included a link to Roland's bio and a link to the helpline that he referred to in the interview. Fantastic interview. He really did a great job of really taking a quite frankly, a misunderstood old stereotype topic of mental health and really hopefully put it into more some contemporary context for all of you. So I really hope you enjoyed that. Well, we're nearing the end of today's episode of Players Anatomy. I want to thank you again for listening. If you like what you heard, please tell a friend, subscribe. We continue trying to grow our listening. We will continue also to be looking to you for what do you want to know about? What topics do you want us to hit? You know, we are obviously going to continue to try to go through what we think you want, but please reach out on any of our social media platforms. Just search at Bell and Health Titletown and message us. Let us know what topics do you want us to cover. We'd be more than willing to do that. And finally, let's take a minute for Charlie's Cut. I'm really going to stay on the topic of mental health. It just seems too pertinent after speaking with Roland here of, you know, really more than anything trying to talk to the parents. But also, if you are a kid listening, one of our athletes, any age group listening, you know, please have this hard conversation with your parents of, we need to continue to check in with each other. You know, I kind of joked around, my daughter and I try to use the positive vibes only, but maybe also we need to revisit expectations. If you are constantly being told that, hey, you tend to yell a lot at practice, or you tend to yell a lot during games at your kid or at the other kids, you know, maybe you need to revisit your expectations of, why are we doing this? You know, I think that's the one thing. Don't get me wrong. I'm as competitive as they get. And there's times where I get all wrapped up and you want to yell at the ref. And every once in a while, you just have to catch yourself up. Why are we doing this? You know, it's, you know, for me, sports has always been about life lessons. You know, obviously, I want my kids to succeed and I will encourage them to do whatever they can. But at the same time, if it's not fun, what are we doing? And at the same time, also of, we're trying to get some life lessons out of this, right? So be part of the solution, not part of the problem, please. And truly maybe try to yourself, try to take in those positive vibes only. You know, if you're a parent and you have a fellow parent on your kid's team that just seems to be screaming at all the kids, it might be uncomfortable, but maybe it's time to have that conversation with like, hey, you know, we want this to be fun. You know, obviously we want to win too, and we want to be successful, but We just as a team need to settle down and as a parents make sure we're setting the right example. Well, thank you again for listening. I'm Charlie DeClean, and we'll see you next time on Players Anatomy.